Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about Finding Dory, Central Intelligence, and The Shallows. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, on streaming, or in the back on airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings, all.
Hello.
On this slightly humid,
yes,
and muggy,
balmy
July,
Tarzan humidity like
post Brexit world that we're in.
But that's how it should be. You know, this time of the year. No, the weather.
Yes.
Oh, let's not go into Brexit.
Yeah, let's not do that.
No one wants to engage me. I've been on the soapbox for days.
I will engage you.
That's a whole podcast.
It is indeed. All right, no politics this week. So we have...
The world's coming to an end. I'll just say that. But okay, carry on.
My choice is a little bit political for Netflix.
Oh, good. Okay, that's a nice little segue. So this is our weekly pick on Netflix. I can't find anything on Netflix, which we do because that's often what we hear when we talk to people about the movies and Netflix. So, guys, what are your picks for the week?
So mine is Team America World Police.
Yes!
Is that on Netflix again?
It's just come on Netflix again.
Fantastic. Okay.
I mean, I grew up loving things like Thunderbirds and Stingray and that puppetry work. And so I think that this came out probably in my adulthood. And it was kind of interesting to see puppetry done in an adult way.
Well, this is the South Park guys, right?
Exactly. And it's, you know, it's political and it's interesting and it's funny and it's naughty and it's good.
America.
I think it might.
Yeah, I was going to do that. I wasn't sure if you'd bleep it out.
Not to overstate things, but it might be one of the funniest movies ever made.
It's really good. It's really good.
In a very nihilistic way, yes.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Terrific. I'm adding to queue right now. Okay. I'll pick, So again, I'm looking at a list of movies that are coming out here in July, and there's a couple of things that kind of pique my interest. I've got maybe Mean Girls, but no, I already did a cheerleading movie.
You did, yeah.
Recently, so I've got to bring up the macho. In which case, I'm going to go with...
Bring up the macho.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, yes. Brilliant.
It's a terrific movie. Kurt brilliant Russell stars movie. In this. It's a piece of 80s nonsense, and it's so entertaining. I hope it stands up to the test of time, because it has genuinely been a long time since I saw it. But... I just remember watching this back in the day and just finding it to be both chintzy, cheesy, and hilariously entertaining. It's got a wicked sense of humor that runs throughout it. It's politically incorrect in so many ways that I think they just had fun with everything in it. So Big Trouble in Little China. If you haven't seen it, it's an 80s, can we call it a classic? Does it qualify to be a classic, or is it more of a cult?
I think it's a good classic B movie.
I think so.
And a genuine B movie it is. Yes. It doesn't pretend to be anything else.
Yes.
Yeah, I loved, again, you know, it's a great throwback. I loved that program growing up in the UK. It was called Monkey, and it was this great, fantastical...
You keep talking about Monkey on this show.
I know. Asian TV show. It was just superb about these weird characters. One was a monkey.
It was awful.
It was so good. One was a pig and one was like a corpse, and they were escorting a priest.
A corpse is escorting a priest. That sounds very logical.
It was brilliant. I loved it. So anyway, Big Trouble in Little China kind of is a nice throwback for me. It kind of reminds me of that mystical, you know, Asian... loveliness.
Yes. So my recommendation this week is going to be a movie we all saw at the Tribeca Film Festival last year. And it's a movie called Meadowland.
Oh.
And it stars Olivia Wilde and one of the Wilson brothers, Luke Wilson. And
very dark.
Very dark. Anybody who ever doubts that Olivia Wilde is just a pretty face should watch this movie. I mean, she is so committed, almost disturbingly committed, as she plays a woman who is just coming undone, expectedly so, after the death of her child. And in many ways, the movie's just not afraid to go with her into the depths of what she's going through. And you know, Luke Wilson plays her husband. And this is a beautiful, committed performance from Olivia Wilde. If you're a fan of her, you should watch it. It's a pretty remarkable film. Meadowland.
Terrific. I don't think I saw that one, so I'm going to add that to
the list.
Did
you see it?
I watched it, yeah. Very, very, very tragic. But again, I think this is a really different Olivia Wilde to anything we've ever seen her in.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do our reviews for the week. So we have Finding Dory, Central Intelligence, and The Shallows.
Finding Dory.
Okay.
Let's go for it.
So Finding Dory is, of course, the sequel, if you will, to Finding Nemo, and it's directed by the same person who helmed the original Finding Nemo, who is Andrew Stanton, who actually has a pretty remarkable filmography. I mean, he directed WALL-E, he directed Incredibles, he directed Finding Nemo, and he directed Cars. And essentially, this is the follow-up to the Finding Nemo story, in that this time around, Dory gets the spotlight. She was the sidekick to Nemo in the first movie. In this case, it is Dory who goes on an epic search to try and find her parents from whom she was separated. And to the two people in the world who have not watched Finding Nemo, Dory is this adorable little blue tang fish who suffers from short-term memory loss and is voiced delightfully by Ellen DeGeneres. So all of those people are back again. Ellen DeGeneres is here, and then Diane Keaton plays the mom. And the movie's already made more money than any other animated movie in the history of cinema. So did it deserve to do so?
I thought you were going to say more money. Look, Pixar know how to get you emotionally, and this one gets you right from the outset, doesn't it? I mean, we waited a long time for the second installment, and it was totally worth it. I don't think it's as appetite-satiating as the first installment, but this is really, really enjoyable and a great use of old characters with a good injection of new ones. I think Dory is called Dory because it's an abbreviation for adorable.
Joe?
I was a huge fan of Finding Nemo. It really, for me, was the first Pixar movie that, like, nailed it. For me, I enjoyed Toy Stories, but when Nemo came out, I felt that there was some real magic to this studio. So they were capable of doing something that other studios weren't. It's going to sound horrible, but I think this movie was, you know, as much as Finding Nemo was full of memorable moments, this movie was full of forgettable moments. I think there is definitely an emotional journey it takes us on, but I think I found the whole thing quite melancholy, and my take home message from this movie is that I never felt the joy and the fun and the adventure of Nemo. I felt sadness and real pity towards the disability of the Dory character, and so that affected me and the way that I perceive this movie. So, you know, is it accomplished? Yes. Did I love it? Struggling.
Yes.
So, you know, Pixar has brought some of the most original content on screen, and I love how they've completely broken the Disney mold, which was very traditional in its storytelling. And, you know, Finding Nemo was a great example where it's a journey, but at the same time, it does not by any means follow a mainstream path to that journey. In many ways, this one feels like a retread of the original Finding Nemo movie, and like the good people at the Film Experience, one of the best online sites on cinema, like they have pointed out, I don't know why this movie is called Finding Dory. It should actually be Finding Dory's Parents, right? Mm. Because nobody's finding Dory in this movie. But anyway, I digress. But I think I enjoyed the movie. I liked it. As their sequels go, it's not even close to any of the Toy Story sequels. But it's not as horrid as Cars 2 or certainly, right, you know, or even Monsters University. So I think it lies closer to the top. But I know it does come across as a little bit of a disappointment because it for me, the whole structure of the movie felt like a retread of the original Nemo movie. And there's many things I liked about the movie, and one of those things I think I liked is what you did not like about it. I think the more I think about, you know, Finding Dory, I realize it speaks to parents who are trying to rear kids who have disabilities or who are somehow different. I remember original Nemo also, you know, he had a problem with his fin.
Yes.
So I think this is a story about anybody who is different from the rest of the school of fish, if you will. And from that perspective, it gives it a little bit more weight. But overall, like you, Joe, I had a little bit of a disappointment. But I love the new characters. I love the Ed O'Neill voiced...
Hank
voiced octopus, you know, and the whales, so, you know, who had this... confidence problem.
I mean, I think you're both absolutely right. I think it's a lost opportunity, and I think around making some really good narratives around conservation, and I think it's trying to say something about pollution in the ocean. There's this great scene where Dory gets lost, and then she ends up with one of those six can holders, you know,
the plastic
holder, and that's on her fin, and you know, there's bits of the coral that's starting to die in some parts. I think there could have been a really good narrative here about conservation and more about relationships, but it doesn't go for it. And so I feel like it's a bit held back. I feel like it wants to say more about even the whole relationship between Marvin, Nemo and Dory. They're a family, but they're different, and they live together now, and it's not necessarily a romance between Marvin and Dory. That's never what it was about, but I feel like it stands on the edge of saying a lot, and it never really voices that opinion in any way.
I think nobody's going to argue that Finding Nemo is a great film, but this movie just falls short of greatness.
Well,
for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I literally have Dory-like amnesia about the journey that we went on. Whereas with Nemo, there were all those, like, moments that are seared in my brain. The seagulls, the sharks, the dentist's office, the turtles. I would struggle to remember anything other than the octopus in this.
Oh, no, I mean, the whales are funny.
The whales were in the original movie, too. I mean...
Right. The seagulls, voiced by Idris Elba?
No, not the seagulls. They're sea lions. Off. That's hilarious. The imaginative getting across the road and the different vessels.
That has literally evaporated from my mind. And I don't know that you'll remember this in 3 months' time like we did with the original Nemo. Because I think it is derivative, and I think... You know, our minds will eventually meld it over time. So I don't know quite what's missing here, because it is an emotional movie, and it definitely, you know, I at the appropriate point in the story, I did find myself in tears, and they're very inventive on, you know, writing these characters into these corners, and you're like, all hope is lost, and then, you know, being very ingenious in terms of how they rescue the day, but it's just not got that spark.
I think it's too short. It's too short, and it's simple. It's very one note.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm one of the seven people on the planet who really, really, really loved The Good Dinosaur. Not to take away from Inside Out last year, but, you know, and that was a very, very simple story. There was no frills. But it was so emotionally resonant. I was sobbing in that one. I was kind of very emotionally kind of in the lukewarm range. It never came to a boil. Not that that's the movie's fault. And visually, it's just spectacular.
It's stunning to look at. So colorful and pretty, and yeah, it's good.
Realistic.
I wrote the word Piper in my notes.
Yes.
I don't remember what that means, so I do have Dory-like amnesia. What does that mean? Someone help me. I wrote the word Piper.
It was the delightful little animated short which came before
it.
His name was Piper. And as those their shorts go, I think that one is a high mark.
Yeah,
I really loved it.
So I was thinking, what the hell was Piper?
It was about that little bird.
I know, now it was about that little cute little bird, yeah. Yes. Okay, so there's a really cute animation before the main movie, which it's called Piper.
Yeah.
Thank you, Yazdi.
Yes.
Okay, so let's, before we get amnesia, let's score this one. So, Yazdi, you go first.
So I think Disney's real strength is in their original material, as we saw last year with the amazing at every level Inside Out. And I think maybe they should think again about doing too many of these sequels. And if you look at their, if you look at their portfolio in the next few years, it's full of sequels, and that kind of fills.
It's a disaster.
Yeah, it gives me a bad feeling.
Cars 3. Incredibles 2.
Yeah, so...
sequelitis.
Yeah, so really they need to move back into original filmmaking. Be that as it may, I think, like I said, this movie's not Cars 2 awful. I had an absolute blast while I was watching it. I won't lie, it's visually beautiful to look at, but it somehow didn't resonate with me emotionally. 6.5 out of 10.
Which I will.
I'll be generous. It's hard to do a good sequel. It's not a bad sequel. 7 out of 10.
Joe.
You're absolutely right about that. With any sequel, it has to be twice as good to be perceived half as well. We've said that many times, and I think that this movie definitely suffers from that. I'm going to land on a 7 with this. Not that that is a reflection of my entertainment level in the moment. I think it was very thoroughly entertaining. I think the kids will love it. It's like The Force Awakens in that it's a retread of what we've seen before, and it's fun in the moment, but you step away from it and you're like, I didn't really see anything new here.
Seven.
Yeah, and another 7 from me. I mean, I'll probably put a more positive spin on it by saying, great standout characters like Hank make this a pleasure to watch. I think it's emotionally captivating and it's imaginative and just fun. Maybe a little too short and simple, though. Maybe it needs a little bit more heft in terms of story. So, yeah, 7, 7, 7.
Yeah.
Keep swimming.
Yes.
Into the Shallows, perhaps.
Ooh.
And sorry, in terms of segues, that was
nice. Wasn't bad.
Nicely done.
That's maybe not one of the worst ones that I've done. So, The Shallows then is a it's a thriller movie by Jean Collet Serra. It's essentially a thriller when a girl by the name of Nancy, played by Blake Lively, ends up surfing on a secluded beach. She finds herself in the feeding ground of a great white shark, and although she's only stranded 200 yards from shore, survival proves to be the ultimate test of wills. So that's essentially the premise for The Shallows. Guys, what did you think of it?
So there's a reason why I don't go in the ocean, and this is it. This movie is my worst nightmare, and man, this was a vengeful, insatiable, nasty shark. What a bitch.
How do you know it's female?
No, the situation.
Yes.
Yes, Dee.
This movie is way, way, way better than it has any reason being. Somebody mentioned it, that this is just a very good B movie, and not like the, the folks at the film
not
experience
B for
said
blood.
That. No, not B, and that's not the score of the movie, but like a B movie. And it's really about man versus some manner of savage beast. In this case, it's man versus shark. But being in that genre, I think it does a really nice job. I mean, there wasn't a lull in the whole movie. And I think a lot of it has to be placed at the feet of Blake Lively. And God forgive me for saying this, but she's so convincing here. I mean, she is not this little, she projects a lot of inner strength, and not just physical inner strength, but also emotional strength. And I didn't see that coming at all. Oh my God, this is the definition of a summer film for me. So much entertainment. Joe?
Yeah, no, this is incredibly effective. I think the movie is just, it's perfectly paced, it's perfectly constructed, it doesn't overstay its welcome, and it's an absolute riot. This director really understands how to play with our emotions, and I think it's effective as something like, The Conjuring 2 that we saw. I mean, I literally leapt from my seat on 3 occasions in this movie. And the only thing that saved me was Rashmi, who didn't leap quite as high, and I landed on top of her. Because this was genuinely frightening. But I agree, Blake Lively was superb in this. The camera loves her.
Yes.
The director loves to shoot her. She's real. She's not this wallflower. She knows how to survive. And therein lies this brilliant kind of cat and mouse game between her and the shark. And, you know, yeah, there's a couple of moments where I'm like, oh, come on. But it didn't detract from the fact that this movie was just, was relentless. And I just have to say one more thing about the camera work. Flawless.
Yes.
This movie is so well shot. The overhead shots, the way the bay looks, the surfing moments, the underwater scenes. It's
the cell phone stuff.
That's right. It's very inventive. It's so crisp and it's just a joy to watch. There's nothing to the plot. But it's an absolute gem of a movie.
Yeah, I think the genius of this movie is that it makes you feel agoraphobic and claustrophobic at exactly the same time. It's a one-note movie. Like you said, not much goes on. But it's as horrific to watch as The Conjuring 2.
Really?
We literally were watching this through our hands. There was one point where we had to look at each other because neither of us wanted to look at the screen.
I loved it. I ate it up.
I mean, it's just bloody and relentless and, you know, you can't help but compare it to Jaws. Jaws is like the original fantastic shark movie that probably made many of us insanely scared to get in the water. That's hard to beat, but this is close. This is good.
It's the intelligence of the shark that's frightening here.
It's relentless.
Yeah, and at some point, again, somebody else wrote about this. The shark is about as big as an ocean liner. I don't think there is, you know, there's a shark in all of nature that big. But when I was watching it, was there ever a minute when I had disbelief? No, I believed that goddamn shark. You know, afterwards, it all feels horribly, you know, tacky. But in the moment, it's very finely done. And, you know, I was just looking at this director's filmography and, you know, he started off making horror movies. He made the House of Wax remake and then he made a movie called Orphan.
That was one with Paris Hilton in it, wasn't it? House of Wax?
I don't know, possibly. Yeah. And then, you know, last year he made Nonstop, the movie with Liam Neeson.
Oh, that's right.
You know, and...
On the Plane.
On the Plane and Julianne Moore, which I really liked. Remember that movie? And Lupita Nyong'o...
Hello, Governor. It was that one.
Yeah, Lupita Nyong'o was in it, exactly. And then Run All Night.
That was actually a good film. Now I look back.
But this is a guy who knows how to thrill.
And
how to create tension. And he uses it in spades. And again, the technical aspects of the movie are not to be underestimated. I mean, this whole movie has been shot in a giant tank. But whatever they did, you know, it seems really believable. You know, when she's hurt, I believe that she was hurt and that she was hurting. And it really puts fear in you because at every minute you are Blake Lively.
Yes. Well,
I'm not Blake Lively. I mean, I don't look good in a bikini. last time I checked. But, you know, you feel like, oh, my God, what would you do now? Like, you know, oh, my God, this, you know.
I'd be dead.
And
I'd be dead and eaten.
And to the movie's great credit, I think it knows that everybody who's shown up there has shown up for a particular reason to be entertained. And they've probably seen the trailer and they know the premise of the movie. So it wastes no time in getting to the premise right away. It's like no fluff, no, you know, patch, backstories, all that.
Rah, rah, like, I'm out to eat you. Right, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, it gets to the shark so quickly. And the movie itself is not belabored. It's a crisp 90 minutes. It gets in and out. Gets its job done. And best of all, this is why I hate those goddamn Superman movies. The climax is so economical. The last battle between shark and man is, what, 3 minutes long? It's deeply satisfying, but it doesn't go on and on and on. This is a person who understands economy.
Yeah.
You know, and so we don't get bored by it.
And so cheaply made, I would say. It's like no costume change.
Yeah.
No scene change.
And she was very creative with using her wetsuit. You know, sometimes it goes in the top, sometimes the bottom, sometimes it's a tourniquet, sometimes it's like heat-giving device. She was very resourceful.
But that's the thing. I mean, I think that we have to credit her as an actress for bringing that level of reality to the character, because I winced with pain in so many moments, but I also understood, you know,
the jumpy moment was really funny.
Her motivation, I know. I mean, but you know, she's resourceful. It's and I don't know. There's just something about her the level of fight in that girl that it makes the movie really satisfying, because you feel like there's this kind of battle of wills at play, and this shark seems intelligent and
vengeful
and relentless. But in the same way, she is absolutely driven to survive. There's never a moment where she's like, you know, eat me now.
And to the movie's credit, it does explain why the shark is angry.
Did it?
Yeah. She tries to burn that shark, remember?
The shark was injured.
Yeah,
the shark was injured. Okay.
So now all humans are to be eaten.
I see.
Yeah, but anyway.
Okay, let's wind this one up. Yes, you go first.
So, you know, I really have a fondness of movies which have no pretense of being anything else than what they are. And this is a movie which wants to entertain you. It has no regrets in saying this is a good, entertaining B-movie. And it just really delivers in spades. It's not Jaws. It's not trying to make any big statement about conservation or how we live now or any of that. It just wants you to have a good time. I really enjoyed this movie, 8 out of 10.
Joe?
It's an able entertainer and nothing else, and that's enough.
And I would say The Shallows is surprisingly deep.
Ooh!
Sorry about that. But it really is. I mean, it works on many levels. It's, like you said, Yazdi, it's a slice of delicious entertainment. I can't wait to watch it again, and I think it's going to be as affecting the second time. Finely crafted stuff. Not 9... Solid 8.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, not the 9.
This is a theme of the podcast. I'm going to go with an 8 as well. This is a really good, entertaining, effective, affective movie. Don't go in the water, and certainly don't go in a body of water that's secluded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two other things I wanted to... Go on.
I was going to say, I mean, part of the movie's genius is that she's not out in open water.
Right. Mm-hmm. She can see the shore.
It's right there. She can see it.
A short hop, skip, and a jump away.
See, and that's clever, yeah.
Really clever.
Yeah.
There's something very elemental about it. It's something very, at the end of the day, it just comes down to man versus nature. You know, in the same way that Robert Redford movie was, in the same way Gravity was. But this is so much more pulpy and so much more, you know, I'll do anything to entertain you kind of thing. The other thing I wanted to mention is this movie has such a good sense of geography, right? Even though it was shot in a tank, you know, this is where she's at. This is where the buoy is. This is where the shore is. This is where the shark is coming from. This is how it's circling.
Yeah.
And there is not weird things blowing up. Right.
Correct.
Is very clear.
And it's not taking cheap shots where the shark is coming from someplace you don't expect it to. You know, kind of at any given time where the shark is, where she is. And, you know, no stupid cheesy things where it suddenly comes out of, you know, boo moments. Yeah, you know, it's all very logically placed.
And that's what's scary, because you know where it is at all times.
Yeah.
And it has the best supporting actor, that little seagull.
Oh, I was just going to say, the little bird, best bird in movie. There won't be a better bird.
Best supporting animal.
Best supporting animal. I don't think there'll be a better
animal. I love that bird. Yeah.
This comes after Finding Dory.
Yeah, I know.
Yes.
Wow.
That's true.
Yes. High praise indeed.
Yep.
All right.
8, 8, and 8. Go see The Shallows.
Definitely. Final movie of the week, Central Intelligence.
Oh, there's more.
Which only Yazdi saw, and I do like myself a bit of The Rock. So after he reconnects with an awkward pal from high school through Facebook, a mild-mannered accountant is lured into the world of international espionage. This is directed by Rawson Marshall Thurber. It's written by Ike Barinholtz and David Stassen, and some other people, and it stars Dwayne Johnson, Kevin Hart, and Daniel Nicolet, amongst others. I love me some Kevin Hart and some Dwayne Johnson.
I love the tagline for the movie. The tagline of the movie is
"Saving the world takes a little heart and a big Johnson."
I love it.
That's awesome.
That is funny.
That is so clever.
So Yazdi, is this one that Joe and I should catch up on?
It's a buddy movie, right? It's not exceptional, but it's funny in parts. I mean, those two people, they are such entertainers, right?
I think they're
very hardworking, and they really want you to have a good time. I think the movie's biggest fault is that it's kind of disposable.
Coming from Dodgeball director, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I like Dodgeball.
And... I couldn't shake off the feeling, and I've read a few reviews. Nobody's kind of mentioned this, but I couldn't shake off the feeling that this movie was a lot more, you know, subversive in its original form, but that somehow along the way, studios kind of made it more mainstream. So it's got, it, I think within the movie, it's fighting to be different.
So you think maybe it was a R and it, they took it to a PG-13?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. But, I mean, it has Jason Bateman and Aaron Paul in it too, which I think...
Yes, and they're both... Jason Bateman has like, he's on the screen for like 3 minutes, but he's so good. And when is he not? But I think the only misjudgment, and it's a small misjudgment that they might have made, is, you know, Kevin Hart is so funny when he's just improvising. You know, you just let, you know, kind of like Melissa McCarthy, you just let them lose and right. they'll just keep talking funny. It's very weird that the plot of this movie kind of saddles him with being the straight guy to Dwayne Johnson's crazy man. So it kind of came off, I like Kevin Hart, although I forgive him that horrible Get Hard, but I won't go there.
I like that.
But it's weird to kind of have him play the straight guy against, you know, which kind of is a, you know.
It's almost like caging him in some
ways.
Yeah,
he seems very caged. And not to give anything away, but I think the movie starts off initially with the first time you see Dwayne Johnson's character, you know, he's wearing this rainbow horse kind of with a unicorn t-shirt. And, you know, he's like, he says he loves 16 Candles and he loves these John Hughes movies. And I think, honestly, this movie was written for the Dwayne Johnson character to be gay. And somewhere along the way, it just became like, ho ho, no, that he was just funny. Because, I mean, he kind of is playing along that through half stereotype. Of the movie, through the stereotype, halfway through the movie. And he's so good at it, you know, against character, against type. And then towards the end of the movie, they kind of,
shy away from it,
which seemed to me a lost opportunity. But it's disposable. It's entertaining. Back of the airplane movie, 5.5 out of 10, which I'll... Oh, I don't know. Should I do a 5 or a 6? 6 out of 10. 6 seems too generous, but okay, 6.
Yeah. 5? Give it 5.
5 out of 10. Yeah. 5 out of 10. I wouldn't ask anybody to watch, to spend like $15 to see.
Right, there you go. Yeah. That's the way.
It's done reasonably well critically. I mean, it's certified fresh with a 67% score on the Tomatometer, which does pique my interest because I think Get watch Hard it. was way lower. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the
thing I always put a plug in for it.
the trailer and the press for this didn't have any real appeal for me at all. It seems so derivative, so generic in its, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, let's put these
two people together,
and yeah. So yeah.
And when you let them kind of just to their own devices, the two of them really riff very nicely. Like there's a great scene where, you know, Dwayne Johnson tells Kevin Hart that you're like a snack-sized Denzel, you know. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, like a lot of really cute little things. Yeah. And Amy Ryan is in this and she doesn't get enough work in Hollywood. So, yeah, I just...
The Rock has very good comedic timing.
He's so good.
I mean, he's underrated. I love him in the Furious series. He's so good.
He did that great series on HBO, Ballers.
Ballers, yes.
That we watched and enjoyed a lot.
Really enjoyed it. He's really good in it.
He brings...
It's a different side of him.
Well,
he's very charismatic.
That's right. And very relatable. Mm-hmm. For somebody who, you know, physically right. is, you know... very potentially intimidating. I mean, he would be, you know, back in the day, he would have been playing the Stallone and Schwarzenegger roles, right. You know, but he has this side to him that's just very warm. And yeah. I love...
Sweet even, yeah.
And sweet, yeah. Yeah.
And so. I love that he hasn't gotten down the Jason Statham route, you know. I'm really... He's kind of stayed true to himself, I think, and Ballers is a really good series.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
Yeah, it's really, and it's very watchable.
But it literally rests on his shoulders. Mm. I mean, Ballers doesn't have much going for it in the sense of other script characters, okay. But he nails it. It's just a joy to watch. So,
yeah.
All right. mail@movierollers.com. Let us know what you think. twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers, instagram.com/movierollers, google.com/movierollers. No, I made that last one up. Until our next podcast, too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me
as well.